It's really good to see you all this morning. We've been studying the book of Acts together for a number of weeks now, paying attention to the Spirit's movement and the revolution of the intimate taking place among the followers of the way. Walls are coming down and people are coming together. Last week, we considered one of the most famous stories in the whole book, the story of Saul on the road to Damascus, where he's blinded by the light and asked by God, "Saul, Saul, why are you hurting me?" Pastor Elijah invited us to hold God's question too, "Why are you hurting me?" and look carefully at how our beliefs and how our actions and inactions are hurting people. If you missed it, I strongly encourage you to listen online. Today's story comes right after Saul's conversion. Only Peter returns to center stage. This is a brief story about Tabitha, and it only holds our attention for just a moment before Luke tells another big, sweeping story about Peter and Cornelius and the realization that the good news of Jesus is for all of the Gentiles, too. From a literary standpoint, today's story is part of the setup for what comes next. If I were to take some liberties and summarize what the commentators have to say about this brief passage, it would be something like this. The gospel writer wants us to know that Peter is like Jesus. So he tells stories about him that makes that clear. A woman dies and Peter is summoned to her corpse. He goes with the disciples to the upper room where her body has been washed and prepared. He sends everyone out of the room, then prays and tells Tabitha to get up, and she is brought back to life. This reminds hearers of Jairus' daughter. Jesus goes to her house, takes her hand and says, "Child, get up." She too is brought back to life. All around them bear witness to their resurrected lives. Though there are plenty of differences in the story, Luke effectively makes his point that Peter is like Jesus. Most commentators also make sure to point out that Tabitha is the only woman specifically named a disciple in the New Testament. Not only is that a fun fact, it's a profoundly important one given the battle over women's values and roles throughout Christian history. Yes. At least two volumes, right? Yes. But I have to be honest with you, most of this analysis left me really frustrated. I turned to all of my favorite commentaries and sources, even to Dr. Jennings, who has guided us through so much of the series, and I kept coming up short. It's not that I don't appreciate the points that they are making about the role of the story, but they all felt, well, boring. I was frustrated because, like, this story seems so much like a crack in the window to a vast array of so much more, and we mostly just blitz right by. As I paid attention to my frustration, I realized I was bothered on a number of different levels. Perhaps most obviously, I'm bothered as a woman. I'm not sure if you've noticed at this point, but there aren't that many stories about women in the Bible. It's not that women don't show up at all, but arguably they are most often in a supporting role. And not only that, when they do show up, like in the creation narrative with Adam and Eve, stories about them are used to cast women into roles of less than, as the cause of sin in the world, as objects to be controlled. So here we get the chance to glimpse a woman who's actually recognized as a disciple and called one by name. Yeah, I want to stop and linger a while. Both church and culture have been battling to control women's bodies and freedoms for far too long, so when we come upon a story that might offer us some new imagination, some new air, some new visions, I don't want to rush right by it, even if Luke's primary purpose was to say something about Peter. We know Tabitha lived in the seaport town of Joppa that sat on the border of two cultures. We know she was called a disciple by name. We know she had both an Aramaic and a Greek name, Tabitha and Dorcas. She carried multiple identities within herself. We know her life overflowed. I love that image. Her life overflowed with good works and compassionate acts on belief of those in need. And yet there are so many questions about Tabitha that are left unanswered. Somewhat like Isaac's reality of living with the pain of death from the day of his birth, I also felt profoundly frustrated about how her death was described as a matter-of-fact telling of what happened. As if her death were just part of the setup of the story. Having stood next to death many, many times as a chaplain, I know this isn't part of the story we can skip over. I feel confident that those actually living the story had no idea that Tabitha was going to be brought back to life in a day or two. Rather, I think that they felt the gravity and sadness and weight of her death in the pit of their stomachs. And even when they sent for Peter, I still don't imagine those grieving had any expectation that Tabitha would be brought back to life. In truth, I kind of wonder if the two people who went to Peter weren't trying to find something to do, find some way to be useful, to find some way to busy themselves, trying to find some way to do something so that they didn't have to sit with their grief just yet. And I wonder what other grief Tabitha's death stirred. You see, grief has this stickiness to it. Any new loss that we experience tends to grab and attach itself to all the other losses that we've experienced in our lives and brings them back to the present moment. Although grief changes and evolves over time, it never goes away. Once we have our first loss in life, from that point forward, we are a griever. So I find myself especially wondering how the widows felt. Their name in the first place, widows, indicates that they know profound loss. Though this story is captured in a few short verses, much more had to have taken place. Joppa was 11 miles from Lydda, a full day's journey each way. It must have been 2 or 3 days of full-on grief and mourning before Peter even shows up. It's so easy to rush past the grief in this story, to hide it or try to bury it or try not to let it really be seen. But we find ourselves running into the wall of despair when we hide our grief and make it invisible to our community. After coming up short with commentators most of the week, I finally found an article written by a womanist biblical scholar, Phoebe Dickerson. Her article is called The Many Faces of Tabitha, a womanist reading. In truth, I only discovered this article because of the death of Dr. Katie Cannon, a groundbreaking womanist, ethicist, and theologian who I saw my friends' testimonies of her impact on their life plastered all over the place, and I couldn't stop reading them. Dr. Cannon's death pressed me to see what womanist scholars had to say, if anything, about Tabitha. And Phoebe Dickerson opened up the text in ways I didn't even know that I needed. She clearly articulates that we don't know a lot about Tabitha. We don't know her family situation, if she was single or married or widowed or otherwise. We don't know her socioeconomic status, whether she was a woman of means or not. We don't know her occupation, nor do we know if Joppa was actually her hometown or if she moved there. And not knowing these things, we make many assumptions as we come to the text. She helped me to see them. Namely, we reduce Tabitha's discipleship to a form of volunteerism, to pastoral ideals about the roles that women should play. We assume that if she had any means at all, that she got it from her husband or from his estate if he died. We write off her work without even recognizing that maybe Tabitha was an instructor, a financial manager of the community, an early version of a union organizer bringing women together in the community. Not to elevate those roles above others, but just to help us see the lens through which we view this text. Dickerson presses us to ask, what if instead of Tabitha being a vehicle to uplift Peter, we imagine Peter going to Joppa in order to promote Tabitha's discipleship? What if we stop to recognize the similarities between Tabitha and Jesus? Yes. Tabitha's body is washed and prepared for burial. Jesus' body is anointed for burial. Tabitha sacrificed for others, died, and was raised. What if we stop to see how Tabitha is like Jesus, how Tabitha lives again in resurrection power, a new Jerusalem? Discovering Phoebe Dickerson's commentary on Tabitha opened up this whole summer series for me once again, as she invited me to notice the walls that I didn't realize were there. She invited me to see how closely the wall of despair is related to invisibility. When we see and acknowledge the depth of our stories, we can address suffering, oppression, and grief. But when our stories remain cloaked in invisibility, despair sets in, sometimes without us even noticing. Before we go any further, I have a confession to make. When we were planning and dreaming up the series for this summer, and we were talking through Acts and deciding which text to focus on, in truth, we included this story because we didn't have any others about women. We knew it wasn't a sweeping story like Peter or Stephen or Philip or Paul, but we knew we needed to include Tabitha, and thank God that we did. You see, we need to read our sacred texts together. We need to look deeply and see what stories we are missing. The revolution of the intimate unfolds in our midst when we really hear and understand and carry one another's stories, especially the stories that have been silenced and ignored and diminished and disparaged for far too long. We cannot help but be transformed by the Spirit of the living God as we do this work together. We work through the wall of despair when we make our stories visible. Tabitha's story has been used to show how Peter is like Jesus, and that is true. But we are invited today to linger, to look more deeply, to listen together with the depths of our being, and to see how Tabitha's story is like Jesus too, how she shows us to the power of resurrection. When we can't grieve or lament or find a place for our stories, we land in despair and hopelessness. When we make stories visible that have long been passed over or that have been long utilized for another purpose, the walls, or whatever we decide to call them, crumble in our midst. Thanks be to God.